So today, in Shear, the guys wanted to know, why is it that Mikhlela gets to be in this building, in the Reisha building, whereas they, in their words, are stuck in a dump? And at first I went ahead and first I made a joke. And I said, because the girls would not be able to deal with the monster-sized bugs that are found all over under the beds, in the bathrooms. But then I said something seriously. I said, the truth is, they have the nicer campus because they learn a lot more than you do. And that they heard. That they heard. Now we can start that again, you know. Okay. So if you don't hear me, please go ahead in the back. Feel free just to shout. You can't hear me. That's totally fine. I'm not insulted. Tonight, I wanted to speak with you about a topic that I think is, if you have one shot to speak to a group, if there's one message or idea to share with the group of Jews, I felt that this was the message that I had to share. You see, I traveled all over, spoken in many places, to many different types of crowds. But unfortunately, if there's one constant that I found that has cut across all populations, all ages of Jews, all the different demographics, is unfortunately a very real and pronounced lack of Jewish pride. Now, when I say pride, I don't mean arrogance. We do not need any more stuck-up Jews. Instead, what I mean by pride is a feeling of confidence. Or as Webster Dictionary goes ahead and defines it, a feeling of self-respect, a feeling of gratification arising from an association with something good or laudable. Unfortunately, many of us feel one time or another, whether it be embarrassment, whether it be shame, whether we feel defensive about our Judaism, about the land of Israel. And I'll tell you a story. This is a story I heard from Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, the famous psychologist who opened the Center for Treatment of Addiction, one of the first ones in America. And he was at this big convention in New York City. And if you know Rabbi Twersky, if you've ever seen a picture of him, you know that besides being a brilliant psychologist, he also happens to be the descendant of a great Hasidic family. And he has the long beard, and he has the long frock, the coat, and that upturned hat, flowing white beard. The pays are hidden underneath the yarmulke. And Rabbi Twersky goes ahead, and he goes from his hotel, he gets on the subway to go over to the convention that's taking place. And he's standing on the subway, he says, and there's this woman dressed chic, the right bag, shoes, and she's looking at him, and she's glaring at him. And it doesn't take too long at all for her to make her way over right next to him. And she mutters under her breath, "You people, you make me sick." Rabbi Twersky just, she says, "I'm also Jewish. You people, you make us look terrible. We're not in Europe anymore. Why don't you get with the times?" stands there with no reaction. Until finally, she pauses to take a breath. And Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky leans towards her and says, "Man, I'm sorry, but I'm Amish." All of a sudden, the woman's, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I can't tell you how much respect I have for you. In an ever-changing world, you somehow managed to hold on to, you know, the ways of the past. And then I visited Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I have an Amish throw on my baby grand piano. And she's falling over, apologizing. Going on and on until finally the stop comes and he's just standing there. And the train stops. He walks to the door and she's following him to the door, going ahead and apologizing. And as the doors are about to close, he turns to her and he says, "And ma'am, would it be so terrible if I were Jewish?" And he takes off his hat, revealing his kippah. And again, the woman is shocked. You know, it's crazy. Something I hear over and over. I was visiting England earlier this year, and a Talmud of mine was come to his house. I come to the door, I'm knocking on the door, and no one is answering the door. And I'm standing there, I don't know where he is. About a half hour later, he comes back and he looks flustered, he's upset. "What happened?" He says, "I'm so sorry I'm late. I brought in a soldier to speak on my college campus, University of London. And he says there were hundreds of people who showed up to demonstrate. How can you go ahead and how can you have an IDF soldier speak on campus? But the Muslim cleric, the radical Muslim cleric who spoke a week earlier, that there was no problem. That there was no protest. It boggles the mind. You would think after 9/11, all of the Islamists would go ahead and find a place to hide on campus. But it's not the case. Whether it's in the University of Toronto, whether it's Columbia University, they're the loudest groups, and it's us, the Jews, who cower, who are ashamed, who are embarrassed." And you know, I wish I could say it has something to do with how religious you are. You know, the more religious you are, the more pride you have. But the truth is, it's not true. And I'll prove it to you. I'm going to tell you the story when I realized I had absolutely no Jewish pride. I spent 2 years in Eretz Yisrael learning in yeshiva. I didn't really do too much learning throughout my high school career, and that's an understatement. And after my years in yeshiva, so I was enrolled in Yeshiva University where my father went, and all my brothers had gone, and I was expecting to go. And I went ahead and I told my father I didn't want to go to Yeshiva University. I wanted to go to a full-time yeshiva, someplace I would go ahead and do university at night college. I wanted to make up for lost time. And my father begrudgingly agreed, but he said, "Listen, on one condition. You're not going to go to YU. You're going to go to some state college, university. You make sure you have a..." He said a 4.0. Now, I wasn't going to have a 4.0, but I had to have very close to it, a perfect GPA. So I agreed. And I went to Yeshiva Shari Torah in Muncie, and I would attend the Ramapo New Jersey College State School at night. And look, you go to night college, the classes are obviously co-ed, they're mixed. And I didn't know this about night college, but about 75% of the class were ladies, female, 25% male. So I come in, I'm in like this super religious fervor, and I go ahead, I have my davening jacket everywhere, my tzitzit are at my knees, I have my big black, at that point it was felt yarmulke, and this was my modus operandi. Whichever class I went to, I would get there early the first day, I'd stake out my territory, the back corner of the room, and I would go ahead, I'd bring my little Gemara, I'd put the Gemara in whatever book, and I would sit in the back corner of the room, and I would learn until the end of the class, go ahead, go to my car, and get out of it. Just escape. That was my deal then. But you know, you can't help but notice things in different classes. And I was taking a class called The Psychology of Perception. And in this class, I noticed there was a guy who had a tremendous amount of charisma. Very charismatic guy. He was always very funny, always a quick joke, very good-looking guy. And this guy, like, planted himself in the middle of the room, and, like, he was like a million, he was like a sun. Everything was around this guy. He was the center of everything in the class. And I watched this, and I would sit there and do my learning. This guy's name was Lee Casus. Always fun, always, you know, going ahead, inviting people to go out with him, come with me, always coming in. Every day, you know, his arm around a different girl coming into the classroom. And as the semester goes on, we had an assignment that accounted for a significant part of our grade. We had to do a 20-page report on psychology and perception. And the professor says, listen, this is the deal. I'm going to go ahead and set every person in the class up with somebody else, a buddy, and you're going to go ahead, and this is who you're going to do the paper with. Now, I go ahead, I survey the class, overwhelmingly, you know, it's girls. I'm this yeshiva guy, non-Jewish girls, and I'm like, oh no, this is really bad. This is bad. And I'm starting, oh my gosh, this is what am I going to do? He goes ahead, and this is totally random. He takes a piece of paper, says this name, this name, this name, this name. Says, Don Marcus, Lee Casus. Oh, Hashem, thank you. I see Lee look, like, to the back of the room. I make eye contact with him, I go like this. Lee sees me, he's like, you know, great, okay. Right after the class, I go over to this guy, Lee. I say, Lee, this is the deal. Hi, I'm Donnie Marcus. Lee Casus, great. We're never getting together. We're not meeting. No buddies. I'm going to do the entire paper. I'm going to put your name on top of my name. I will give you a copy of the paper, the professor a copy of the paper, and done. This Lee Casus, huge smile, puts his hand on my back, says, that's exactly what I had in mind. You know, we're good to go. Lee is down, super. And true to my word, I do the whole paper. I give him the copy, his name is on top of my name, and, you know, super. Now, after that, it's the only A of Lee Casus' college career. But after that, he stopped becoming my buddy, you know, inviting me for drinks with him, no thank you, Lee, it's okay. We talk a little bit, and but really not too much, just, you know, hi, how you doing? Good, okay, what's going on? Good, Lee, super, great. You know, hey, Donnie, how you doing? Everyone always say hello to me, like, very, very nice. I'd walk in like this, go to my corner. He'd always come in the room, hey, Donnie, how you doing? Good, Lee, good, okay. And the semester ends. Goodbye, I'll never see Lee Casus again. You know, done. Okay, nice guy. Why would I want to see him again? 2 semesters later, I'm in a class called Multicultural Psychology. Now, to understand what this class is, the professor of this class was a person by the name of Professor Byers. He had a horseshoe of white hair and a white goatee, tall, lanky fellow, very dignified manner. And he's sitting there, I get into class early, I take my seat in the back of the room so I make sure I get my seat. And I'm just watching, trying to feel out what the class is going to be like. And of course he's like, about to start, you know, in comes Lee Casus, you know, Lee comes in, he knows half the class, I have no idea how. That kind of guy. He sees me, I haven't seen him, this is 2 semesters later. Donnie, how you doing? Good, Lee, you know? Back in my life, Lee Casus. Into the room walks a guy wearing a black leather bomber jacket, and around his neck is a keffiyeh. Now, do you know what a keffiyeh is? It's that Arab headdress like the Palestinians in the Intifada. And he's wearing this as his scarf. Comes in with a keffiyeh. Now, this Professor Byers, the whole room is just like sitting there, you know, surveying everybody. He sees this guy, and immediately he like perks up. He says, what's your name? Muhammad something. This Professor Byers says, where are you from? The guy says,
I'm from Palestine. There's a place, Palestine.
This Professor Byers says, oh,
fantastic. He says, I spent the last 4 summers in the Middle East. Ready for this? Jordan, Egypt, Lebanon, Syria. You know what it was back in the day for an American citizen to get permission to go to Syria? And there's only, I'm going to draw a circle, there's only one little country in the middle that he didn't go to. And I realized very quickly, I had that 4-0, or very close to it, but I realized if my GPA is going to get destroyed, this is the class that it's going to happen. Especially when I heard that like 75% of the grade is based on this oral presentation using two principles in psychology called Gesellschaft, the mind shop, to study a certain people or nation. I'm like, oh no, because if it's a test, I can go ahead, I can say, look, I got a 90, I got 100, this equals this. But one of these, you know, oral presentations, it's so subjective. So I realized with this guy, I got to be careful. And my luck would have it that two of the classes, how many classes do you have in a semester? Two of the classes fell out, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So I go ahead, I tell the professor, look, I have to speak to the classes, and I have to speak to, I have a holiday coming up. The professor says, okay, wait a minute. And I knew what I was in for. I come up to him, the class is a total joke. Joke. But of course the professor doesn't know that. You know, to him it's the most serious thing in the world. And I come up to him and I say, listen, you know, this is, you know, I have this holiday, Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and he immediately starts giving me a problem. He says, yeah, well, I know the Day of Atonement, what's that other one? I take out the calendar, I brought a small calendar, I say, look, it says Jewish New Year, he sees it, and then he goes into the, you know, it's going to be very difficult to go ahead and make up the, you know, my class. And I'm thinking, I'm like, yeah, I know. And in my mind, if you could read the blurb, it's like, you're a joke. But okay, I'm like, yeah, I know. It's going to be really hard. I know I'm going to work extra hard. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm about to leave. And I hear somebody say, yeah, me too. I turn. And there's Lee Cazus. A few feet back. Me too. The professor says, you too what? He says, those are my holidays. I'm not going to be able to be here. The professor looks at him like, well, he just gave me permission. What's he going to say? Okay, make up the word. I walk out of the room. And right when the door closed, I say, Lee? I never realized how brilliant you are until now. I say, every single religion, you can have every holiday. You'll have Kwanzaa Day. I mean, you'll never ever be in class. Lee Cage just looks at me like, I'm Jewish. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking Lee coming in every day with his arm around, you know, every week at least with a different girl. I'm like, Lee, you're not Jewish. Now, you have to understand, there's a friend of mine who has this theory, and the theory is true 100%. He calls it the Babel theory. And his theory is that when you go ahead and you see Jews on like different places, they like want you to know that they're also one of the tribe, they're also Jewish. Like, and when I heard him say it, it was like a light went on, like, because I can't tell you how many of these strange things I've had. Like, I'm walking through the Seattle airport, I'm walking by, and like, the guy says to me, Zygazo. I'm like, okay, I take care. You know, I'm not, like, I get on a plane, I'm flying, there's some strange flight somewhere, a connection, this, that. I'm on a plane, I walk by a guy, he looks at me, he goes, shop liver. I'm like, okay, shop liver, you know? But Lee, like, none of that. The bagel theory broke with Lee Cazus. No idea, no tip-off, no nothing that he was Jewish. I go, Lee, you're not Jewish. He goes, Donnie, I'm Jewish. I'm Sephardic. I go, Lee, you're Jewish? He goes, that's what I've been telling you for the last 5 minutes. Now, let me be very, very honest. If you could read my mind, screaming was Nebuch. You know what Nebuch means?
What a pity. Never. I'm thinking in my head, another world lost. Ah, lost. He's so long lost, Jew. He's totally lost. And I talk to him and make small talk another few minutes, and I leave. Well, comes time, I do my report. And Lee does his report. Total joke, you know, like, total joke. And after I read his juice, I, what are you doing? What's the deal? He told me an amazing thing. His father was like, it was Iran or one of these countries, had nothing. His father built a furniture empire, all these stores. And his father never went ahead and graduated high school, forget college. His father's dream was for his son to go ahead and to graduate from university, from college. So this guy, Lee Casers, he says he's taking over his father's business. He said he has his furniture empire. But all his father wants, he doesn't care what he gets, he couldn't care less. He wants him to get a diploma. So he gets up there, he does his report, he's totally true, he doesn't care. And then Muhammad gets up there. Muhammad gets up there in front of the class. He's now wearing the keffiyeh on his head. And forget Gesellschaft, the mind shop, forget psychology. He goes off on the most virulent anti-Semitic rant I have ever heard in my life. Israel does it, the Jews do this. The Zionist imperialist murderers, they don't let women get to the hospital. They go ahead and they kill defenseless children. I mean, he just goes off. And I'm sitting there in the back corner. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe. At first, it's utter shocking disbelief that this is happening, that he's saying this. Now, I'm sure the professor, I'm positive, Professor Byers is going to shut him up. He's going to tell him to sit down. And I like look up at Professor Byers, and this Professor Byers, he's like this. Sitting there, shaking his head, smiling. And then I think, Don, just shut up. Keep your 4.0, keep your GPA, don't do anything stupid. Just keep your mouth closed. Just keep your mouth closed, it'll be done soon. Just keep your mouth closed. And the guy doesn't stop. And now you can tell when somebody's looking at you, it starts. I look up, African-American guy looking at me, Asian girl looking at me. Every single person in that room, as this guy is teeing off on the Jewish people, on the Israel people, on Israel, the state of Israel, and just going crazy, every single person is looking at me. And I'm just sitting there looking in my Gemara, and then it happens. It was an explosion. From the middle of the room comes scream. You liar! You liar! You lying piece of... You're a lying fool! And all of a sudden, in the middle of the room, Lee Casers, his face is beet red, and he's screaming on the top of his lungs. And you can't imagine, I can't imagine the words he's saying, the things he's saying. You're this, you're that, you monkey, get out of here. I mean, he's crazy. But Lee Casers, the Jewish people would never do that. Israel would never do that. You're a liar. You're this, you're that. And Israel, he's just so rage at everybody. No one knows, because Lee was always the guy. He was the playboy, the joker. No one knows. At first, they didn't know what to, is he kidding? But as he keeps screaming, it just, everyone's like, and then this Muhammad starts yelling back, it is true, you're murderers. You're this, you're that. And I'm, oh my, and then all of a sudden, this Professor Byers, who never lost his cool, never, always so, you just hear a slam on the desk, he rises to full height, and he says, how dare you have such an outburst in my classroom? And the problem is, he's not looking at Muhammad. He's yelling at Lee. He says, I'll have you thrown out of this university. Sit down. And at that point, Lee starts sitting down, and And those are the only, you know, two eyes that matter. And this Professor Byers is like, he said, everything Muhammad said is true. It's all true. And at that point, I said, forget the 4-0, forget the great. I love Jewish history. Especially modern Jewish history. I go ahead and I stand up and I say, Professor Byers, it's all true. And I can't tell you how I knew, but there was something. I was very good at this in high school. I saw that it was like a fraction of a second, but I saw he hesitated. And I participated in class and saw. Thank God I was an intelligent guy, and I saw that he was scared. And I said again, is it all true? And Professor Byers says, it is mostly true. And I knew he was mine. I said, sir, can you tell me what happened on May 14th, 1948? What happened? And Professor Byers starts getting flustered. What happened? And Lee's like, what happened? What happened? Like, shut up. No. I say, on May 1948, the state of Israel declared its independence. What happened on May 15th, 1948? What happened? Lee again, echo, what happened? I say, the five mechanized Arab armies attacked Israel en masse. En masse. I said, how many soldiers do we have? Soldiers, a man can't run. How many? 45,000. Against what? Forget soldiers. How many troops did the Arab nations, made up of 50 million people, have? 650,000 troops. What are the three noses of Nasser? And believe it, the three noses of Nasser. Like, they just shut up. It was absolutely crazy. And I'm going off and off at this professor. And I'm just yelling it. I'm not. And he's stuttering and he's turning red. And then I go for the jugular. I said, does everybody here know what tenure is? So tenure, when you become tenure, you basically, unless you really mess up, you're set. You do research, you write some papers, you have to publish, but it's the comfiest position you can get in the academic world, in academia. And I went ahead and I said, to have such virulent anti-Semitism spewed in a college classroom that my parents' tax money are paying for. I lied. I was from Staten Island, New York, the college students. I said, I have good reason to go ahead. I should bring this up with the Board of Ethics of the university. I'd like to see how they would respond. I'd like to hear what they would say about the anti-Semitism that was spewed in this room today. And at that point, this Professor Byers realizes his tenure had just become very tenuous. Now, he could have lost it for this. And at that point, Professor Byers stands up and he says, it's like a whisper, he says, Muhammad, leave the room now. And he looks at me and he says, I'm sorry that I let this go on in the classroom. This Muhammad, infuriated, pushes over a desk. Like, I don't know if he took his bag. He just goes to the door. Lee's like, get the bleep out of here! Lee's down, slams the door. Lee is high-fiving people in the middle of the room. I sit down. I'm shaking. Lee sits, the professor sits down. He's shaking. And I don't know what, the professor didn't know nothing else to say. The class ended, and I just made a beeline just to get out of there. I go running out of there, and I almost made it to the car, and then I hear yelling behind me, Donnie, Donnie. I stop, and Lee Kazus, that guy, maybe he was a Rosh Hashanah, and Kippur Jew, maybe, I don't think he went to Rosh Hashanah, I think he said Rosh Hashanah because I was the Rosh Hashanah. Certainly didn't do Shabbos, you would never know as a Jew. I turned around, and I was very emotional. I must have been tearing. And I said, Lee, I sit with my holy books and I sit and I study. I said, Lee, today you taught me what it means to be a Jew. You taught me what it means to be a Jew. And he saw I was very emotional, put his arm like that. It's okay, you were great, you were great. Now come with me, let's get some drinks. We'll stop the story there. I invited Lee for Shabbos a few times. He never took me up on the offer. But there's some guy out there, Lee Kays, who's running some furniture empire, who told me what it means to be proud, to be confident, to stand up for my Judaism. And let's be very honest, it's difficult. It's very hard. Because, you know, to be a Jew means that you're different. You know, I once heard from Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he told me something. When I first heard it, I felt it was a little harsh, but then I understood it. He said, you know what it means to be a Jew? He says, you ever go to a Broadway play, Broadway show? You come out of the show, it's winter time, and you go ahead and you walk into that lot where you put in your car for like $30, you know, an hour, and you're making your way there, and you're freezing cold, and all of a sudden, you smell her before you see her. There, about a few hundred feet away, there's the grate. You see the steam coming up, and you see a homeless woman crouched over it to go ahead and to grab some heat and smell the stench. You walk to the other side of the street. Her and I, we have absolutely nothing in common. Then you go ahead, a day or two later, you go to the mall, and you go into Abercrombie, or no one goes into Abercrombie anymore. I'm dating myself here. Okay, you go into one of the stores there, and there you go ahead and you're looking at the side, you know, and there you see that guy, great looking guy, one of these Christian prep school guys, you know, wearing his varsity jacket, and you look up, he looks up, your eyes meet. Yeah, we're the same. We're the same. Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg says, you know what it means to be a Jew? It means to realize you're as different from that guy or girl in the mall as you are from that old homeless woman over there. When you are a Jew, you're a Jew. A Jew has a different spiritual DNA. The Gemara tells us we're Rachmanim by Shonim Gomle Chasadim. And again, I'm not telling you it's an easy thing. I'm not telling you it is. It's difficult. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose you. Why did he choose you? Why did he choose me? We have to look into ourselves, and that's what the summer is about. We have to find who we are, what we are, and why God went ahead and chose us, but he chose you. That is a fact. And he chose you for a mission. And that's to be a Mamlechus Kohen and Goy Kadosh. To be a light among the nations. To bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu out to the world. To bring holiness into the world. To light up a world that's stuck in incredible, incredible darkness. HaMavu Ben Kodesh L'chol Ben Or L'choshech Ben Yisrael L'amim. And it's when we embrace those differences that we're respected. When we try to assimilate, we try to fit in. That's when we're pushed away. Or as Rabbi Lord, Jonathan Sacks, says, one of my favorite quotes, non-Jews respect Jews who respect their Judaism. Non-Jews are ashamed by Jews who are ashamed by their Judaism. I heard a story from one of the top people in the world. He said he went ahead and he was running an event in Los Angeles. And apparently there's a big Hollywood lawyer. He represents the producers of many of the movies that we've seen, or maybe shouldn't have seen. And this producer has his thing. What's his thing?
He finds himself in so many different circles. But what he does is he's orthodox, he's religious. He always wears a kippah. No matter where he is, no matter whether it's at the after party of the Oscars, no matter if it's at the Emmys, wherever he is, he always goes. You know, you see that guy with the yarmulke. So they had him go ahead and he had him speak to a group. And he went ahead and the man told an incredible story. He said he was representing a certain producer, and they were trying to go ahead and to work out the conditions and terms to work out this movie. And the lead in this movie was probably the top African-American actor in the world, Denzel Washington. You've heard of him. And what happens is they're working out, and there's a little break, and Denzel comes over to this Jewish lawyer, representing the producer, and says, afterwards, can I speak to you privately for a minute? He says, sure. Goes ahead, and after the meeting, he walks into a side room, just him in the Denzel, and he goes ahead and he says, the following. Takes his finger, points it into this Jewish guy's chest, and he says, I'm a black man. He says, I get up in the morning, I'm a black man. I get into the shower, I'm a black man. I come out of the shower, I'm a black man. I get into my BMW to come to the studio, I'm a black man. And he's sitting there going through his entire day the same thing. Finally, he finishes and he says, he says, you take that off your head. Nobody knows you're Jewish. I can't tell you how much respect I have for you that you wear that on your head. When we embrace who we are, when we embrace our mission, anything else is disaster, it's calamity. In fact, it's a famous Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi says something so frightening. He said, do you know how old and what happened in Mitzrayim? When did the first Holocaust, the first pogrom, the first Inquisition in Jewish history? Mitzrayim, when did it happen? Why did it happen? The Beis Halevi says, the Jews got together. They said, listen, we don't want to be a fifth column. We want to fit in. We should assimilate. Let's go ahead. Let's fit in. Let's do things to go ahead. To go ahead and to fit in more, to disappear into the Egyptian culture nation. The Beis Halevi says, at that point, it was built into history, into nature itself. The more we try to go ahead and lose ourselves, the more we deny our unique nature and our unique mission, the more we're going to go ahead and be pushed away. And he says, not as a punishment. Not as a punishment! But it's a preservation. Preserve the Jewish people. My goodness, we have so much to be proud of. We have so much to be proud of. We're Bani Banu Slavoko. We have a direct line. Tacharish Baruch Hu. Who else has such a thing? We have a Vivek Shema Shemai. All he wants. All he wants is for you to realize how much he loves you. And how much he wants a relationship and a connection with you. That's all Akash Baruch Hu wants. Don't take it from me. Take it from a person who wasn't a great lover of the Jewish people. Probably the greatest writer in American history. Mark Twain. If you've heard it before, I apologize. It's just an awesome quote. If the statistics are right, the Jews constitute about 1% of the human race. It's just a nebulous dim puff of stardust, lost in the blaze of the Milky Way. Probably the Jew ought hardly to be heard of. But he is heard of, has always been heard of. He is as prominent on the planet as any other people. And his commercial importance is extravagantly out of proportion to the smallness of his bulk. His contributions to the world's list of great names in literature, science, art, music, finance, medicine, and truth learning are also way out of proportion to the weakness of his numbers. He has made a marvelous fight in this world in all ages.
and has done it with his hands tied behind him. He could be vain of himself and the excuser. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, the Persian rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded to dreams of and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed and made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned out. And they sit in twilight now, or have vanished. The Jews saw them all, beat them all, and is now what it always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert, aggressive mind. All things are mortal, but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret to his immortality? The secret is that we're bonim, we're children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The secret is that we have that connection. We have that kedusha, we have that holiness. You know, sometimes guys ask me, Rabbi, why are there no more miracles? You know, if I would see the sea split, it'd be a lot easier. And I tell them, you know, Rabbi Yonason, the great Rabbi Yonason Eibeshit says, do you want to see a miracle greater than Kriyas Yom Suf? Open up a Jewish history book. Just read our history! Think about it. Is there, can you name a place that the Jews have not been thrown out of besides the United States of America? Go 250, Carthage. 415, Alexandria. 554, the Diocese of Clement. 612, Visigoth, Spain. 642, Visigoth Empire. 855, Italy. I don't want to read this. We'll be here for the rest of the night. There isn't a country. They haven't burned our books. Pogrom, the Inquisition's Holocaust. And we're still here. I mean, my friends, have you seen a Visigoth lately? They're all gone. But let me add something. There are youngers that I just never got to see. The greatest nace miracle of all. After 1900 years of exile, of being scattered and murdered around the world, we have returned to Eretz Yisrael. We've returned. The very fact that all of you are sitting here right now in this Beis Medrash, in Beit Shemesh, do you realize what the odds are? 80 years ago, they were putting us in ovens! And now we sit free and proud in our own country. We've returned and can walk the streets that Moshe Rabbeinu would have done anything to be able to walk. We're back, we're home. We've returned. And do you know how HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us? You read Jewish history, as I said earlier. Do you know, I read a book, The Birth of the Israeli Air Force. Today, the Israeli Air Force is one of the top air forces in the entire world. We have war games against America. Almost every year, we go ahead and we beat America. We knock down more planes than they knock down of ours. In dogfights. Do you know how the Israeli Air Force started? There was an arms embargo. It started with a handful of Piper Cubs. You know what a Piper Cub is? A Piper Cub is like a go-kart with a propeller on the back. It's a two-seater, so what would the guy do? No bombs, no missiles, laser guns, forget it! The Israeli pilot would fly with this little like go-kart thing. He'd fly over Egyptian plane, over Egyptian troops, and with one hand on the throttle, the other hand, he would grab a grenade, pull the pin, throw it down! Arms embargo, everything we had, we smuggled in, was a ragtag army. What happened was we ran out of grenades. What are you going to do? Leave it to us. Everyone knows which Jew doesn't love soda water, seltzer. They had glass bottles of seltzer. They went ahead, they took a crate of seltzer. He said, give it to me. They bring it up, he goes up, he drops a seltzer bottle, it makes a little explosion, they associate it with the grenade, they go running! This is the birth of one of the strongest, mightiest air forces in the world! come back. You're going to walk the streets in the land of Eretz Yisrael. It's been the dream of our people. What are the words on their mouths? Standing on the lines to the gas chains of Eshtachek Yushalayim. And it's ours. We have so much to be proud of. So much to be proud of. Forget all the Nobel Prizes. The holiness, the Kedusha we brought to the world. Hitler knew it. That's why he wanted to destroy us. He said, I want to destroy the people that brought God into this world. He knew it. My friend once told a story. He said, here there's a guy who's driving with 17 up to the mountains, and he sees on the side of the road, there's a guy, wearing his yarmulke, his car is broken down. Of course, he stops, pulls over, he starts to help him, he's got car trouble, this guy knows stuff about cars, he's helping him out. And while he's helping him, he like sees in the car, you know, like those fuzzy dice hanging from like the mirror? And he sees the fuzzy. Like, you know, usually, you know, maybe a picture of the Lubavitcher Rebbe or, you know, fuzzy dice, a little string. And he takes a second look at the guy. And he says to him, he says, are you, not, what, ask me. He says, are you Jewish? All of a sudden, the guy breaks into a big smile. Got wearing a big yarmulke. No. He says, I'm Puerto Rican. He says, but my mother, she gave me this. And she says, you keep this in your glove compartment. If you ever have any trouble with your car, you get out, you put this on your head, guaranteed someone's going to stop for you. Mika Amke. Who's the Mika Amke as well? Who's like, it was not least to have with a friend of mine. When I was in Yeshiva for the year, we had a Shabbaton in B'nai Brak. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with B'nai Brak, but I'll tell you, look, the apartments are small, the people are poor, a lot of families, they dedicate their lives to learning Torah, keeping the Torah alive. And we were set up at different homes, and the Yeshiva can help these families out, went ahead, gave them money, paid them to go ahead, because a lot of these families, they don't even have meat during the week. Can't afford it. It's only Shabbos, the covered Shabbos, they'll have chicken, and each piece is like for... So what happens is, we go ahead and we've got a card with, you know, the building number and an apartment number, to go ahead and to go spend Shabbos. Make a long story short. I'm learning with my chavrus, this friend of mine, and this rabbi who organized the whole Shabbaton, this is the Sunday after the Shabbos. He comes over, he's furious. He just comes, do you realize how much work goes into the Shabbaton? Do you realize how hard these people prepare for you to come and how difficult it is for them and to open their homes to you? I know because I slept literally. I was given a room and like the four or five children, they all slept in the living room on like cots on the floor. They gave us their room. And he says, do you realize how difficult it is in this and that? My friend's like, yeah, okay. He says, you don't show up to the Shabbaton? You don't come? You just blow off the Shabbos? After all the planning of these people happening in their homes? I'm like, what? We were both together at the Vicious Pitch Friday night. My friend's like, I was there on the Shabbos. You were? I said, he was there. I was with him. He says, where do you stay? Where do you stay? He says, I stayed where he told me to stay. Building 6, apartment 8. The guy looks at his sheet. Rechov Rabbi Akiva? Yeah, Rechov Rabbi Akiva, building 6, apartment 8. The guy looks at the sheet, turned around the piece of paper. It was building 8, apartment 6. All of a sudden, my chavrus realizes what happened. He's like, oh my gosh! Oh, that's what happened! What? He we're here for Shabbos. She says, then she's like, nah, and I'm coming for Shabbat. Oh, come by the coat. She closes the door, they're standing there, okay. A few minutes later, she goes, oh, go, go, doesn't come, come in. He said it was the most beautiful Shabbos. They went to the wrong apartment. He said after that, he went back. He bought flowers. He was so moved by this. Till this very day, he keeps in touch with that family. By the Hachnasas Archiv, they show to two guys who knocked on their door literally minutes before Shabbos. Ka'amcha Yisrael. You know, when Hurricane Sandy hit. So, just to share one story, Rabbi Willie, senior from Yeshiva University, he came and spoke, and he told us a story that was, he said, one of the heads of the major relief, disaster relief organizations in the United States of America, if there's a problem, Haiti, earthquake, anywhere in the world, this is the organization that they send out there. This is the emergency response organization unit that goes out there to show them and to help them go ahead with disaster relief. He said, this guy went ahead and heard it with Hurricane Sandy. He came. And he said, what do we need? And it's taken care of. It's taken care of. What is taken care of? Rabbi Bender from Darkly Torah's son went ahead. Right after went ahead, he got all these things together. He said he didn't believe he went to see with his own eyes. The story goes, he came to the house, this like nerve center. And he comes in, and he sees the board. Anyone who needs diapers, these 10 locations, mattresses, these, water, food, this, that. And he's looking at these maps and all the places and all of these things. And he sees clearly it's a multi-million-dollar operation that sprung out literally in seconds. He said, how is this possible? Where is this all coming from? And he said, from other Jews. He said, this guy, this Gentile who has seen the worst disasters all over the world, he broke down crying in the living room. He was so overwhelmed that Jews care so much about him, that they can do this, that they're willing to do this. I mean, look, just talk about gemachim. How many gemachim there are out there? I'm not making this up. I had a cat. This is going to sound crazy. I don't know why I'm saying this, but I'll tell it anyway. We had this cat, it was this crazy cat. We moved on to a new block. This cat was like fearless. It would just walk into your house and you try to say, get out, usually. And the cat goes running. This cat would scratch you and scratch a few kids. You can't have it. How do you get rid of a wild cat that's not scared of people? Very easy. You call the cat gamach. What? In Ramat Beit Shemesh, there is a gamach. My neighbor went ahead, Mrs. Raymond, and called and came with a cage. There is a cat gamach to go ahead and get rid of wildcats. Well, that is crazy. The level of care that we have for one another. It's crazy. The next step is to share that, to bring that to the whole world. That's our job. We have to embrace who we are. Be proud of what we are. Be proud of what Hashem has given us. And I just want to go ahead and end with a story. This is a story told over by a common man. He survived the Shoah. The year was 1944. September 27th. He was part of a work battalion. These were Jews who were taken into the German army. What it means to be a Jew in the German army, just so you understand. Common man said he was brought to a field. 250 Jews were brought to a field. And they were told, listen, this is a Russian minefield. We have to get rid of the mines. You're going to get rid of the mines. They say, with what? Where's the equipment? They say, it's very simple. You're going to go ahead, you're going to hold each other's hands, and you're going to walk through the field. 250 Jews began. Less than 20 came back. Common man was one of them. he's in this battalion, work battalion, and the Russians are pushing forward. The Nazis are in retreat. So what the Nazis did was everything, anything they needed, any wood they could get, they would saw down telephone poles, cut it into cubes, send it back to Germany. Rip up railways, send it back. Anything they had, anything they would send back. So here, they're in a Polish mountain on the Slovakian border called Mount Amnesia. And Yom Kippur is coming. The next day is Yom Kippur. And all of the Jewish inmates are called together. The head SS officer walks out of his covered wagon and it's pouring rain. And he says to them, I know tomorrow is the holiest day of the year for you, the Yom Kippur. And I know you Jews have accustomed to fast. But remember, you are now all soldiers in the German army. Soldiers. And as such, it's forbidden to fast. Anyone who fasts, death by firing squad. And before he turns and goes back into his covered wagon and driving with him, he turns around and says, remember, it's death by firing squad. Goes into his wagon. Yom Kippur comes. The next morning, no one eats anything. The next morning, they're given their coffee and their stale bread. And every single Jew there, they pour the coffee into the muddy ground. They stick the little piece of bread into their uniform. And they go onto that mountain, chopping the wood into cubes, pouring rain. And Kalman Mann, the Hasidic Jew, he begins to lead the tefillahs. He begins to lead whatever he knew by heart. And they begin over the clang of the hammers and the axes. They're singing the Negunim from Yom Kippur. And as they're doing this, there was a reform rabbi who comes up, who converted to Christianity, who comes up with a group of other Jews who converted to Christianity. The Nazis didn't care. And he says, listen, could we join your prayers? Could we join your tefillos today? Because on today, Yom Kippur, it says, I feel the whole day should be Israel. Even the sinners of the Jewish people can go ahead and return. Can we join you? And he says, of course. And he says, you should know we're also fasting. And together, this group go ahead and they work and they're davening together. And it comes time for Ne'ilah, the holiest tefillah. And they're davening. And in the rain, their tears are mixing together. And finally, three stars come out. The work they finish as they come. And they're about to go ahead and about to eat the stale bread. When all of a sudden the SS soldiers come out. Stand up. They all stand up. Out walks the SS commander who warned them. Erev Yom Kippur. And he's furious.
He says, it's come to my attention that you all fasted.
But you're lucky. I'm a benevolent officer in the German army. I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to give you a chance to repent, yes? It's the day of repentance. I'm going to give you a chance to repent. Anyone who wants to go ahead and repent for fasting, step forward, and you can eat, and they bring out food. And he's waiting. These are starving people. These are skeletons. Not one steps forward. And now, he says, you don't want to repent? He says, climb the mountain and slide down. And these men, more skeletal than human, they climb their way to the top of this nameless mountain and down on their stomachs in the mud. And he lines them up.
Now, who's willing to repent? Step forward and eat grass.
Not one.
Again up the mountain. Again and again. 10 times they climbed that mountain. And 10 times they went in and slid down.
said there was a young German officer of low rank who witnessed this whole thing. And while he's sitting there and they're shivering, but they're also glowing with this inner fire, he walks over to common man and he says, this German officer says, I don't know who is going to win this war. I don't know who's going to win this war. But one thing I do know is a nation like your nation, a people like your people, will never be defeated. Never be defeated. Let's grab hold this summer of who we are. Let's use all of our senses to realize and to recognize how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. Let's be proud of it. And let's bring that to the world, that confidence, that message. And Mirza Hashem, we'll bring Mashiach together. Here's your name. Thank you.